morning, everybody.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. After a long weekend, I hope you are rested and ready for some good stuff to take you into a pretty short week to start April. Didn't fall for any of that stupid April Fool's shit, did you?
I was actually telling producer James that up until, like, I saw this post by Kutso Teledi, I actually completely forgot that it was April Fool's.
I never pay attention to April Fool. I always think it's stupid, so it suited me down to the ground that it was on a holiday where I didn't pay attention to any media.
Yeah.
So I was like, good, you guys knock yourselves out with your dumb April Fool's nonsense.
I did not see it at all. Like, nonsense. It just didn't have it. Yeah, it is. Absolute nonsense. And for whatever reason, I feel like more and more people are getting over it.
Every day is April Fool's Day in the world right now. I mean,
oh my God.
Am I wrong?
No.
I mean, like, we were talking just now about, like, Brigitte Macron, who's the French first lady, and there's so much weird shit around that, and if you go into the rabbit holes, oh my God, you'll get sucked in.
Like, the more you find out, the weirder it gets.
It's like there's no pictures of her as a young girl.
None whatsoever.
Okay, but she is like 700 years old or whatever.
Gareth, I don't care.
How old is she and how old is he?
Like, there's a...
It's a 30-year age gap or something.
Right.
Yeah, and she was a teacher or something?
There's pedophilia in the mix as well. Like, I mean, like, the fuck is going on? Like, what is wrong with these people?
So, oh, man.
Like, and at some point, when the story broke,
yeah,
instead of just releasing one picture of this woman as a child, they went after the people who were investigating the story, firstly, to shut it down.
Yes.
And then they went even further and released a doctored picture claiming that it was this woman as a child. But, like, there's no evidence of her being her for the first 30 years of her life. None whatsoever. The person she claimed she had these kids with before she married the French president, that person apparently is dead.
Listen, Pumi is obsessed with this Kate Middleton story because that's also weird.
Yeah.
But every day there's a new one. That's why I say every day is April Fool's Day, right?
It's lunacy. Like, we're living in, I don't know, it's a revolving door of jokes on a daily basis. Like, it's madness.
I don't know. Is there anything that happened yesterday that anyone would have found funny? Because the way that we're responding, quite rightly, to April Fool's jokes now is the way we should be responding to all news. It's like,
yeah.
I don't believe any of it until I can actually find out for myself and prove that it's real. I'm not taking any of this seriously. So I'm just thrilled it was on a public holiday and we didn't have to pay any attention.
Thank God for that.
And listen, this month, there's that one public holiday, but I've got good news for those of you who, like me, believe that the country is lazy and that we do not need any more holidays.
Mm.
And that is that April the 27th, Freedom Day.
Which is a Saturday.
Is a Saturday. So you have no days off.
Mm-hmm.
But you will get May the 1st. And then, of course, you got voting day at the end of May.
Yeah.
So you're going to be some of those. Some.
Some, yeah.
Some. So May the 1st is a Wednesday. But otherwise, this month of April, from now on, no more holidays.
If there were ever a country in 2024 that needed to do a bit more work, it would be us.
Correct.
It would be South Africa.
On ourselves.
Yep.
On our jobs. On
everything.
Yeah.
Holistical work.
Sanelis is April Fools is for fools.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And those that fall for it. Yep.
Yeah. Dave says we've been lied to for far too long. I didn't find yesterday's fibs to be funny. You see? This is what I'm saying is people are over it.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, how was your long weekend, Jack?
My long weekend was fantastic.
Tell me more. Tell me more.
So I got to spend a lot of time with family, which is great.
That's lovely.
And, you know, we did the ceremonial thing of going to the graveside to visit some of our beloved ones.
Oh, is that a regular annual thing at this time of year? Or is it just something that you do when you're all together?
Well, we do it quite often. But I think this time of the year just felt like the right time to do it this time around. And so we went on Sunday. And, you know, for whatever reason, like, I'm not a superstitious person or anything like that, but there's a grounding that comes with going
to
the cemetery and just coming to terms with the fact that at some point you're going to join those people.
Right.
And
it's humility.
Yes.
That's what it is. It's so, like the ultimate humility. You're like, I'm going to take control of this very uncomfortable fact of mortality.
There
and
you
I'm
go.
Going to I'm going to try and wrestle with it.
And when you leave with an attitude of gratitude. I can tell you that much. And so, as a result, I'm floating on a cloud right now.
I'm actually really pleased you brought that up, because although it's a morbid thing for some people and they don't like discussing this stuff.
Yeah.
I must be a little bit black, because we do this as well. I mean, when I say we, it's just really me and my parents, because my brother and sister are just so disinterested in this stuff.
Yeah.
But we have a family graveyard, right? And there's just, there are five generations that come before me that are buried there. So it goes back a way. And if we didn't go and clean this up and tidy it up and sort it out, it would just go to rack and ruin.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, a lot of places in this country where people are meant to be maintaining and looking after stuff, they have gone to rack and ruin.
So, yeah, they have.
First of all, it's like a duty, which can be a bit of a pain. But I like that duty, because again, it's connecting you with where you come from, the people you come from, with the contribution they've made to you and to the world. So you take a minute to be grateful, which is what you were saying just now. And then it also reminds you that you're going to be in there one day. So don't get too ahead of your skis. And I think it's also really important, because it gives you a sense of identity. These are the people I come from. Their blood flows in my veins. Yeah. I have a background, so I'm not too worried about having to constantly assert myself in the world, prove that I'm worthy, because I've got this behind me, you know?
Yep.
Which is nice.
And it's...
I think that's special.
It's extremely comforting as well.
Definitely.
The idea that there were people on this planet that fought through all of the struggles that come with life. They took it on head on, and
by the way, it was much tougher for them.
Extremely tougher. Yeah. Extremely tougher. And they paved the way literally for you to live. And I always bring it up with my friends that, like, when you break it down to the when we go all the way to the molecules and all of this stuff, we are literally the physical embodiment of all of our ancestors put together. And it only makes sense for you to connect with wherever the physical body of that person was left. So
correct.
It's always great.
No, it's
always
a good thing. And for all the reasons you've just said, I'm a big fan of the same.
Yep.
So Francois says he spent the weekend in KZN, also felt like a graveyard. The place needs serious attention.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, that was my opinion last weekend when I got back. I said I was very disappointed in the way that the place is looking. It does feel like it's a province that's in decline and it's falling apart. And certainly the politicians are not helping.
Yeah, they're not.
You know, I mean, it's going to be one of the most hotly contested places in the election, which is now just a month and a bit away.
Yeah. You know, I wasn't particularly fond of King Zwelithini before he passed, but I genuinely wish he was back.
Yeah, you think he was a bit more of the glue that we needed?
I think so. The king now, Mrs. Zulu, it seems as if he doesn't have that gravitas.
He hasn't been in the job for very long.
Yeah, but for whatever reason, when he ascended, you remember the chaos that took place.
Oh my God,
just
straight after when they couldn't decide on the succession.
Oh my goodness.
Family split in half, and half of them didn't want him as king, the other half did. That's just a mess.
And when we thought those fires were out, then, you know, Mr. Jacob Zuma put some petrol on top of it. Now it's ignited a different kind of flame. And, you know, if you had a calming voice in the midst of all of that stuff, I think a lot of things would be able to settle down. And given the fact that Uncle Pozzi can't tell anyone to do anything, he's not going to step in and help either. So it is what it is.
Listen to these two horrible stories. Mapelo says, my uncle's grave was invaded by bees a few years ago. Now going to our family graveyard's a nightmare.
Oh, my goodness.
You get stung by bees. Ugh. And Hugh says, I tried to tidy the family grave, some new plants, gardening, clearing, etc. 1 week later, the new plants are stolen. Meh. This is Africa. Jesus.
Do you know what I mean?
Oh, wow. Okay, so there's so much to get to. Because there was a lot of campaigning over the weekend. I actually saw a TV show yesterday. They were lamenting the fact that over Easter weekend there were so many politicians getting involved with the church.
Oh, yes.
So I don't know why anyone's, you know, surprised by any of this anymore. It's like, come on, guys. You know so many of our church leaders are trying to cozy up to politicians that it shouldn't surprise you that when the politicians are a month away from voting and they need everybody to come to their side, have a literal come to Jesus moment, that they would not pitch up at churches and do the most brazen, sloppy, untidy, off-putting kind of politics of all, which is to try and tie themselves to religion. I mean, the least morally upstanding people in the country are almost without exception politicians. Mm. And then for them to take advantage of the most holy weekend for Christians and go around pandering to religious communities, well, I'm not surprised. If you are, that's on you.
Mm-hmm. I'm not surprised either.
Just, yeah, it's exactly where I would expect them to be.
It's page 2 of the South African political rule book.
Yeah, so you ally yourself with one of the churches. They let you in. Mm. There's some kind of an exchange made, whether it's money, whether it's influence, whether it's lobbying, whether it's when I need you, I'm going to call on you. You know, you see them all. I watched ENCA on Sunday morning because I was getting ready. We were going to a family lunch. So I turned on the TV, had a cup of tea, and I'm like, oh, Jesus. Like at Rhema Church, literally, Jesus. Mm-hmm. At Rhema Church, they've had the cameras on. Before there's anything going on there, you see all these people pitching up in their Sunday finest. And the reason it's news is because it's like in the run-up to the election.
Yeah.
These people are getting into the church. I think if you are a real religious leader of any salt at all, this is probably the one time you don't want those people in your churches at Easter. You could do what you like. I'm not going to tell any religious leader what to do.
Yep.
Most of them wouldn't want my wisdom and guidance anyway.
In any case, yeah.
They think I have nothing to add, and I don't blame them. But in this case, guys, you know, talk about squandering your moral capital at a time where you have Easter going on. It's a big celebration for Christians. It's an important one. It's a serious one. Way more important than Christmas to most Christians.
Yeah.
And yet this is the time you decide to let the wolf into the sheep's lair.
And when you think about how fame hungry some of these preachers are, this would have been the perfect time to say, I don't want any politicians in my church. You would have been the only one.
People would have loved you for it.
They would have loved you for it.
I think that's the way to score, actually. If you want to like increase the membership and improve the way that everybody in your community thinks of you, it is precisely that, to chase the moneylenders out of the temple.
Completely. And because the Bible has got so many stories and you can quote from it in different ways, you just find the right verse that goes along with not letting corrupt, devious people into your church. And you just push that narrative for Easter.
I think I just hit the one on the head, the moneylenders. It's the, you know, because always people go, oh, Jesus was meek and mild. And I'm not a very religious person, as you know,
but
I know enough in the Bible to know that that story proves that he was not some meek and mild dude who wanted, you know, that ugliness and corruption around what he was trying to get out there as a message. It's just awful. Politicians are shameless, says Sanele. Frank Gallagher, even he became a politician once.
Yep.
Even though he was already shameless in his entire adult life. It's such a great show. Over the weekend, I watched a TV show about money laundering at a big church. Now, I'm more suspicious of every big church because it makes so much sense how money laundering would work. Well, the other thing that is completely ridiculous to me is that churches do not pay tax.
Yes.
Now, I know that they've tried to change this over the years, and there's some religious organizations who fall just short of not being, you know, held accountable for paying taxes, but most of them get away with it. And I again, it just seems like for that reason, it attracts some very dodgy people.
Mm-hmm.
I am absolutely a fan of tax avoidance. So you shouldn't pay more tax than you absolutely
have to. Yeah.
Not a fan of tax evasion. Don't break the law, because I wouldn't want us to. Although, if the government does push you to a point where you no longer feel that it's appropriate to follow the law, then we should all immediately become every kind of tax avoider and evader. But the fact that there isn't this tax component, you can keep an extra between 25 and 45% of your income, seems a major motive for some very, very crooked people to go into that profession. And you can see it.
There's a very well-known actor, to protect his identity. I won't mention his name, but I had the opportunity to have a chat with him back in his hometown. And he told me, he was like, look, man, if I didn't get into acting, I'd just be a preacher. I was like, okay, that kind of makes sense. Because you'll be able to make your money. It's somewhat of a performance art for some of these people. And, you know, you'd get a nice stage to perform every Sunday.
Sure.
And, you know, these kind of things are the reason why a lot of people shy away from religion. It's got nothing to do with the religion itself. Mm. It's just how people choose to interpret it and use it as a weapon to get whatever things that they want. And my biggest problem with churches is the fact that there's not too many of them that actually help the people they claim they are for.
Exactly right.
Right? Yeah. You've got these mega churches and homeless people sleeping right outside. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, there's room for them to sleep, to have a roof over their heads. You've got people that donate north of 10,000 rand every Sunday. Yeah. And yet there's no money for some starving people out there.
Right.
That's problematic for me. And then you add on top of that they don't get taxed.
Yeah.
Ugh, man. Uh-huh. Ah.
We will see. We'll see what happens. Yeah, I didn't want to turn this into a morning rant, but there we go. It's something that I saw. Quite a lot of that happening over the weekend, these politicians. So I saw the end of e-tolls has finally been signed, sealed, delivered. So again, this is amazing. And I don't make too little of this, because I do believe, first of all, huge credit, massive, the lion's share of the credit must go to OUTA.
Yep.
The organization undoing tax abuse. I bumped into Wayne Duvenag the other day at the airport. And I said to him, well done. You've been at the forefront of this. He's become an upstanding crusader for all the right things about civil disobedience and fighting corruption in a real way. I mean, the OUTA is one of the organizations that I consider worthy of your donation.
Yeah.
You talk about the church taking a tithe. I mean, you could give these guys 100, 200 rand a month and it would be money well spent.
Yep.
They fight for genuinely good causes. They help poor people. They help ordinary citizens. They will stand up and they will defend you. If you've contributed even 50 rand to them, they will defend you should SANREL come after you for e-tolls. No, not a thing, but it could have been.
Mm-hmm.
And so on. So well done to them. Massive, massive credit to OUTA. But I see that Gauteng motorists can finally breathe a sigh of relief. Funny, I got an e-toll bill. I hadn't had one from when they instituted it, and then I got one 6 months after that, and then nothing until maybe 2 months ago.
Yeah.
Then I suddenly got this 80,000 rand one. I'm like, you think I'm going to pay that? You're insane.
Good luck with that, buddy.
Anyway, e-tolls are finally coming to an end. Gauteng Premier Panyaza Lesufi has finalized an agreement with the finance minister and the transport minister to de-link e-tolls from gantries. This will come into effect on the 11th of April, effectively ending urban e-tolling in Gauteng. The power of the people.
Yep.
This is not something to be made light of. People of Gauteng stood up and said, forget it.
Yeah.
You already get enough of our money, you crooks.
Mm-hmm.
You're not getting a single cent more.
Yep.
And we won. We won. Don't let Panyaza Lesufi take credit for this.
No.
Don't let any of the government officials who've been fighting supposedly on your behalf, because they haven't
for
this, none of them, not one politician, you as an ordinary citizen who refused to pay this. And by the way, those people who did pay and who said, oh no, but someone's going to pay for the roads, we've got to do this. Well, you were wrong.
You were.
And you've got to now swallow humble pie.
Yeah.
It's because unfortunate. You screwed up. And stop being such a do-gooder when everyone around you knows that you're just throwing really good money after bad.
Yeah, and like, how were these things not a problem to you if you were driving on the N1 between Joburg and Pretoria and came across four of these things?
You know,
like, how was that not a problem for you?
So how was it going to work for me? For example, I go through three of them on a normal morning in, three of them on the way back. And that would have come to, I don't know, 80, 100 rand a day.
Can you imagine?
I think that was the early calculations. So it just wouldn't have been sustainable.
Oh, no, hell no.
But you know what? We won. That's all you need to know.
Yes.
Three issues that South Africa needs to address to boost the economy. So these, I hate consultancies. I hate them because they really are just doing the job of people who can't do the job they've got the title for.
Mm.
So like, if you're the CEO of a company and you need seven consultants to help you, you're not the CEO of the company.
No.
You should resign. They should hire a CEO who can do that job. You should fire the consultants.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm?
Yeah, sounds right? That makes sense.
Because why pay a CEO who's clearly not able to make the decisions? That's why they need the consultants.
Mm-hmm.
And pay a team of consultants. We know from State Capture how all of those consulting firms, mostly McKinsey and those sorts of guys, sent teams of people, chalked up hundreds of millions rands in fees,
mm-hmm.
and did nothing to make it better and everything to make it worse.
Yep.
They were enablers
mm-hmm.
of State Capture. This is not even a controversial thing to say anymore.
No.
And yet we have government, businesses, parastatals, all three of those categories that are hiring these consultants left, right, and center. They should be fired. Or at least the CEOs that they're doing the work for should be fired. Because we can't afford to pay for both.
No.
And we shouldn't be paying for bad.
Mm-mm.
And clearly, the consulting firms have not covered themselves in glory, so they're not the good.
You know, it actually makes me wonder how possible is it that they've gotten this far with it?
Yeah. Like,
Are people stupid? Are there that many companies that are just inept at getting things done?
It's not that they're inept. There are a couple of reasons. The first reason is that they put people in CEO and other important executive positions who are incapable of making the decision. So they're doing window dressing.
Okay.
They're doing that because of BEE and affirmative action.
Ugh.
And instead of going after and finding the really talented black people that they could put into those positions, they go, nah, we'll put in someone that we know who's been here for a long time and we'll give them consultants to buffer their lack of experience. It's part of the problem. The other problem is that there are just not enough brilliant people to run brilliant companies in this country because a lot of our best brains have fled.
Mm-hmm.
And the ones who are here are so expensive and in demand, black and white,
mm-hmm.
that they are outrageously expensive. So you can't afford them.
The limitations that are placed upon certain companies, especially in the private sector, as far as the way they go about hiring people, like you just mentioned BEE and all of this stuff. I wish there could be some sort of, a report of some sorts where we look at the introduction of BEE up until right now and actually genuinely look at whether or not it was a force for good or bad. Because incompetence. I don't care who it is. I think we talked about this last week when the DA.
I don't think the jury's out anymore. I really think it's like it's happened. We've already seen the result of this. What it has done. I'm going to be as blunt as I can here. It's probably going to get me into trouble, but that wouldn't be anything new either.
Right.
It's proven two things. It's proven number one that it is a colossal disaster in terms of bringing new talented people into the world of business and putting them through their paces and churning out proper, capable leadership. There are obviously some rare exceptions who've, despite the system, made it. And I'm talking about really talented black people who've worked extremely hard and have got to the top and have fought their way through it and have proven that they could handle all the pressure and everything else at the top of this. And remember, business is not for sissies. So
no, it's
not. I'm not saying everybody should. I'm not saying I could. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying a lot of people of any background or resources or capabilities or talents might be able to do that. But what it's also done is it's created this horrible and ugly preconceived notion, which really good black people have to break every time they go into the office, which is, oh, you just got there because you're black.
Right.
So it's created a whole new level of insecurity, of dishonesty, and of people having to prove themselves every day instead of just being accepted for the position that they've taken because they truly are good at that job. I know. I'm certainly, I can't name them. I wouldn't want to do that to them. It would be embarrassing. But I know so many good people who, despite the fact that they've got a job and that they've earned that on their own merits, mm-hmm. are constantly having to fight everyone else in business. Because you're in meetings with other people that you've never met every other day. And then they get underestimated just because they are good and they are black.
Mm.
And people go, well, they must have got that job because of BE. They must have got that job because of affirmative action. So you've undermined those people before they've even started. And these are the good ones.
Mm-hmm.
So we won't even talk about the shitty people who get into those positions because they probably deserve to be underestimated.
Yes.
But the good ones, they don't deserve this.
They don't. And it's almost as if in some weird twist of fate, the ANC government led to black people being undermined the way that they were during apartheid.
That's right.
And when you remember what Nelson Mandela said, if the ANC government does to you what the apartheid government did to you, do to them what we did to the apartheid government. And I hope people are waking up to this fact. I hope more and more people realize that the legislation in this country has done more to bring us apart and keep us down than it has to uplift us. These people celebrating the fact that there's more than 19 million people on social grants is trash. Them, even Panyaza Lusufi trying to act like this ETOLS thing was the idea is trash. Or being told things like unemployment is decreasing, but or unemployment is increasing, but increasing at a decreasing rate. Like, what does that even mean?
You're talking to like, You're trying to bamboozle people because you assume that they're completely stupid.
So
and maybe you're right, but that's still no way to treat your voters.
No, I don't. You, it is absolute. It's absolutely disgusting when you think about some of the short-term and long-term effects of the idiocy that came from the governing party up until this point. Like they've made politics to devolve into a name-calling catfight, essentially. It's like there's these kids in a playground that just can't get along. And instead of an adult walking into the room and pulling them apart and saying, this is how we're going to do things, people are just allowed to run around and go crazy. It's madness.
Well, to go back to the consultants for a second, because that's how I got into my rant and you went into yours. So PwC, one of these consulting firms, has said that they've got some spare time on their hands, identified three key areas South Africa needs to boost the economy. Do you want to hear what these are?
Mm.
I mean, you need a whole consulting firm to work these out. The first one is government institutions are inefficient.
Well done. You want a naughty badge for that?
I wonder what that cost them to figure out. The report says these factors make it difficult for businesses to operate and hinder overall productivity. The second challenge is a logistics crisis. This refers to areas and issues like unreliable transport and infrastructure problems make it expensive and time-consuming to move goods around the country. Again, anyone who's been in traffic knows this to be true.
Anyone with a pulse, really.
The third one is the importance of human capital. South Africa needs a skilled and educated workforce to compete in a global economy. We were just talking about that. So
yeah.
I think you guys, thank you PwC for that excellent report. You could have saved your money. Just listen to what Jack and I said moments before I revealed the answers to your study and saved yourself some trouble.
Hey, man.
Why don't you pay Jack and I to sit and, you know, help your consultants?
It would actually be a better use of your money. And to the people that are tuning in right now, if you ever felt like what you're doing is useless, just read what PwC came up with here.
Yeah.
Don't worry. Right. You are actually adding value to this country. Don't worry. Yeah.
So Propagenda wants to know, what will the gantries be used for now? They'll be used to track and trace probably their initial intention. Well, good luck to them. Yeah, I mean, good luck with we'll them. Just, you know what this is going to do? Again, if they have some nefarious purpose for the gantries, and I don't believe they do because it costs money to run them, and if they're not making money out of them, I don't see why they would run them.
Yeah,
they're not that keen on being a surveillance state. You can get away with anything in this country. We already know that. There's no law enforcement. How many years later, Senzima, you are, we still can't find the person who pulled the trigger. We still don't know exactly what happened with AKA, and there still are a thousand other cases. So don't get ahead of yourself on this. Just relax, Propagenda. I love Sanele says, Sanele says, I'm going to Australia. The white people can stay. I'm leaving. Christopher Hendricks says the government put their negative energy into this country and cause unnecessary conflict among our people.
Well, yeah, that's it. Right. That is it. I mean, even if you look at the US right now, that's exactly what they're trying to do.
Yeah, and Carl says one of the inadvertent consequences of BEE was that it forced ambitious white people to start their own businesses because they hit the ceiling in corporate. More wealth in white's hands. No one talks about this. Again, so, you wanted to make BEE a thing. What you've done is made a whole lot of white people go into their own businesses where they don't rely on government or corporate policies or any of that.
That is a very interesting perspective. I've never thought of it that way. Very good point, Carl.
Then we've got some Bitcoin maximalists in the conversation here talking about how if the ANC wins, your best option is to adopt the strongest asset in the world, save your wealth away from the rand, adopt Bitcoin, taking it self-custody. All right, fine, fair enough, calm down. We've been talking about that for years. And yes, if you have been investing in Bitcoin, it's not been a bad couple of years for the last two or three. But before that, it was hell.
Yep.
We won't forget those crashes that made people so uncomfortable.
Yep.
But on the whole, yes, you're right. And I'm not going to get into a whole discussion of Bitcoin. Marpello says, you never spoke about the fact that Julius Malema told his supporters to go and have more children. He's going to double the social grant. What an asshole, says Marpello.
Oh.
Well, I have nothing to say about it. I really don't.
You know, sometimes I wish I could just call these people up and be on some, you know what, just once, legit sit down and explain exactly how you're going to make that happen. Like step by step.
We had Brett Herron from The Good Party
in
here on Thursday last week. Don't know if you listened.
Yeah, I did.
And he's got big ideas of what he's going to do with other people's money. And he has no idea of how to get more of that money other than just taking it off of people at the barrel of a gun, which is what tax is.
Yep.
And he's got all kinds of plans to do job creation, which again is something, there is no government in the world that can make job creation a thing. What they can do is get out of the way and make the laws that will make it easier for people to do whatever economic activity it is that they can do that is beneficial and creates value.
You know, it blows my mind. It still blows my mind till this day that you still have political parties walking around saying we're going to create jobs. It's not your job to create jobs.
No.
It's not.
Yes, exactly. Oh, man. So we have the result of liberation policies instead of policy politics, which is being stoked by elite business. Those people happen to be white, but that's got fuck all to do with it. Well, we know that business in this country is so craven and complicit that they're best friends with the ANC. So, you know, surprised. It suits them to have things going this way.
It does.
Paul says, I hear SANRAL's having a sale of purple Christmas lights. That's nice.
Get them now, half price.
Yeah, very, very good.
Oh, my goodness.
I don't know what else to say about that. Let's move on to something else. I love the way that government now says to us, you know, like those signs that say hijacking hotspot. You know those ones?
Yeah.
So we're not going to police this problem. We're not going to save you from the hijackers, you pathetic people, citizens that we're meant to care about. But
yeah,
Just be aware there could be hijackers.
Like here. Just here, this corner here.
Yes.
There's, it could just happen.
A friend of mine sent me the longest voice note in history yesterday. It was like 8 minutes long. She did. She put a podcast together.
Yeah.
She sent this to a whole lot of her friends, but they were usually entertaining. So I listened to the whole thing. Mm-hmm. Plus I was going around the house, switching off lights, doing stuff. So
you had a bit of time to kill.
She had this incident over Thursday night, I think, where she and her husband were in bed together and they woke up at 2 a.m. and there was a guy looking into their bedroom. Some vagrant.
Just looking into, like,
moved the curtain. He was looking into their bedroom at 2 a.m. It's obviously some wall jumper guy who was looking for an opportunity to steal something.
Yeah. Okay.
Anyway, I mean, what a horrible thing to wake up to. And,
terrible. You know,
makes me think hijacking hotspot. Sorry, we're the government of this country. We can't actually enforce the laws. We won't actually look after you. We no longer have, as Ramon Cabanac said on the show some time ago, we no longer have a monopoly of violence.
No.
So now you're look to yourself.
Yeah,
just be aware. There could be a hijacker. Just look.
Yeah.
They've gone a step further with water. They've said, according to a recent report, water shortages are expected to persist for the next 5 years.
Expected to persist.
Yeah. You know what it's due to? Yeah, they're already looking for something to blame. Delays in the Lesotho Highlands water project. Doesn't of this course. Sound like power stations that haven't been built
yes.
on time?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Right. Mm. There's a glimmer of hope, they say. The government is taking action to address the situation. Oh, good. I feel so confident.
You remember what the a few, I think it was, yeah, it was in January.
Yeah.
There was that clip of Uncle Posey saying, we have addressed the situation. Meaning in their minds, they've dealt with it.
No,
just
they had
by
a
talking
they
about
had a conversation.
It. Just the conversation means that we have addressed it.
So they've announced a series of new state-owned water resources agencies. Okay, great. The agency's goals are to improve water delivery infrastructure maintenance throughout the country. So while Gauteng residents may face water challenges in the coming years, the government is working on solutions for a more sustainable water future. Watch them blame climate change when everything else falls apart.
Yes.
And they'll say, it's God in the weather.
No.
It's God's fault that we don't have water, people. Because you see, you can't blame him for electricity provision because he's not actually involved in Eskom.
At all.
But when water doesn't fall from the sky, you can always blame climate change and God.
It's just
the ultimate get out of jail free card, isn't it?
It is. And the condescension in how they tell us these things. Like you can expect it for the next 5 years.
Wow.
Five years.
5 years, yeah. Get ready.
So you're telling me you're basically not going to do shit for the next 5 years.
Yeah.
That's what you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
Don't expect your water to be clean or coming out of your tap.
Mm-mm.
For the next 5 years. That's what they've said.
Anyone who sends a voice note over 2 minutes must be unfriended, says Carl.
No, come on.
Come on, Carl. You know what? Listen, have you ever had a phone conversation with a woman? Takes usually a lot longer with your friends. With your if you're a guy, you speak to another guy on the phone. Hey, what's happening? Yeah, all right, I'll see you 1:30.
Yeah,
ciao, bye bye. With women.
So what are you wearing? Are you going? Please make sure that you've got this. Did you leave that on top of the? But by the way, is it okay? Ah.
When the phone was invented, obviously a man invented it.
Mm.
Obviously. So like, it's not again, I know what's going to happen. We also invented some things.
Yeah.
Sure, but the phone was invented by men.
Mm.
It was to convey information.
Yep.
Didn't take long for women to turn it into an instrument for endless communication,
mm-hmm.
and mostly about gossip and nonsense.
Yep.
So,
and you know,
just
the
saying,
the irony is
another another unforeseen consequence of inventing something for men is that we now have to spend hours and hours on the phone. Or listening to voice notes that are 7 minutes long from
And
girls.
You know, the irony is not beyond me that Alexander Graham Bell's wife was deaf.
You make a good point.
It really isn't.
You make a good point.
Genuinely.
Oh, that's funny. All right, very good. I watched Napoleon, says Carl, over the weekend. Was there any reality where Josephine was actually that hot? Wowzers, great movie. Well,
I haven't watched it yet, actually.
Yeah, you've got to watch. It's such a good movie.
Yeah.
Josephine, of course, the love of Napoleon's life, and she just treated him so badly. She cheated on him. constantly. You know, you'd think being emperor of the French and a great general and a man who just, I mean, he really turned the world on its head after his wars of conquest and changed the face of Europe forever.
Mm-hmm.
Wiped out the oldest empire on that continent. And yet, his woman just...
She held him
in the palm of her hand.
Yeah.
But she was, to him, she was the most beautiful woman ever. Joséphine Beauharnais.
Mm-hmm.
He basically adopted her children from another man as his own. And he was devoted to her.
Yeah.
Eventually, a lot like Nelson and Winnie, she became a bit ungovernable.
Okay.
And also she didn't provide him with the heir that he wanted, like Henry VIII believed it was always the woman's fault. So she had to go, and then he married a different woman.
Mm.
And she was an Austrian princess, I think.
Yeah.
Anyway, I mean, it didn't all end very well for either of them, but he did. I think she was on his mind right at the end of his life.
Yeah.
He said, France, the army, Josephine. I'm not necessarily in that order. But those were the three things that were going through his mind when he died.
Yes,
he was obsessed with her to the end.
That's pretty intense. Mm. That is a love story written by real people, okay? None of this Disney nonsense.
Yeah.
And sometimes
full
it
of
doesn't,
tough trials and tribulations. And
sometimes it doesn't all come together.
And usually it's the man who's unfaithful. In this case, it was the woman.
Mm.
There was a lot made in the movie of, you know, the fact that there was this kind of, this bizarre, almost bondage S&M part of that. We don't know that for a fact. But we do know his letters to her were pathetic. I mean, this was a man who really...
Was he like the moon and the stars?
No, it was worse than that. He was like craving her acceptance and her correspondence. We talk about how men share information. Mm-hmm. But in this case, he just wanted her to communicate so badly with him. And it was not...
She was like, what have you done for me, Nate?
Yeah.
Like, what's happening?
She didn't even reply to his letters.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. He's busy conquering Italy, and she's busy cavorting around Paris with other men.
Right? So that's why I always point it out, like, whenever I get stuck in one of those men are trash conversations, people are trash.
Can go both ways.
Man, people are trash. Period.
So listen to this quickly. Debbie says, and this is, I'm not very familiar with this story, but apparently something worked well in Haderabiesport. Have a peek at the Muddy Beng, our municipality who manages our area. They get 72 million rand a month from people, and not one cent goes to Haderabiesport community. We have estates which don't get a great service, a few meters of road, no refuse, no water, electricity, etc., but every person pays rates. So what happened there? Tell me the story of how it all went down after that.
Yeah, I imagine if the Enhartis, I don't think they were burning tires and all of that stuff.
Let me tell you, that dam is such a disaster with that water hyacinth. You can't, it's disgusting.
And you know, like it makes it seem as if everyone is blind to the stuff because seemingly no one wants to step up and do something about it. Or are we too invested in ourselves and making sure that our lives are okay?
The problem is too hard to solve. And people don't have the ability to solve small or big problems anymore.
Mm.
They just don't. That's why if you find someone in your life, whether it's a husband, a wife, a business partner, a service provider, to be as general as possible, like a plumber, electrician who can solve problems, who can really fix things. You got a leak in the roof, the guy comes around, he fixes the leak in the roof. You're like, oh, I'll pay whatever it costs.
Right.
I'm happy. Just find someone who can solve a problem.
Right.
It's like no one solves big problems anymore. When last was a dam built?
I don't even know. I genuinely can't even tell you.
You know, South Africa hasn't built a dam in ages. We hear about this Lesotho Highlands Water Project, but guys, there are no new dams being built.
No. I mean, I learned about this Lesotho Highlands Project when I was in primary school.
Yeah, and they just started it then.
Yeah.
Oh.
So you can imagine 20 years
no.
was just too long for them to keep it running.
Well, let us turn our attention away from these things now and get to some Africanalysis with JJ Cornish for this morning, which is brought to you by the Johannesburg Business School. looking at what's happening around the African continent. It's always a pleasure to spend some time with JJ Cornish. Bonjour, JJ.
Bonjour. You want problems? I'll give you problems.
No, we come to you for the opposite. We come
for
to
solutions.
You. No, we come to you for stories about what's working in Africa. Come on.
Well, I haven't got terribly much today, and I say that with alarming frequency, I'm afraid. But I think I have one of the better bouquets in terms of interest that I've ever had. So it's going to be some day. You know, I don't know, where do you want to start? With Sudan?
Let's start with Sudan and South Sudan. So that's South Sudan, of course, the youngest country in the world, and Sudan, once Africa's largest country, before they split in half. What's been happening in there since then?
Well, of course, you know, they seceded, or South Sudan was allowed to secede. The African Union didn't allow former colonies to change their borders. But this was 2011, and the largest country then. South Sudan left because of a long, long-running civil war. It really was a black versus Arab thing, and they don't like to talk about it as that, but it really was. And they got the oil at South Sudan. Sudan seemed to move ahead. And when they got rid of Omar al-Bashir, seemed to be working towards a democratic solution. Then the army, with the rapid support forces, took on the army. And they've been fighting now for a year, 8 million people displaced, and they're on the verge of famine. There are no online remittances going into Sudan, and many of the African countries work on those, live on those, because of connectivity problems. They can't send remittances into South Sudan. Prices are soaring. There are cereal production cuts. There is a humanitarian disaster there now. Children are dying of hunger as the famine takes hold. Adults are not buying medicine so that they can buy food. And the problem, it means that Abdel Fattah al-Burhan, the army chief, and Hameti, the rapid support forces chief, both believe they can win this war. And that is the real problem. Military men, as long as they believe they can win, won't talk peace.
Yeah.
We have Mukhtar Altif, who runs the emergency response rooms. He gives a single meal to 45,000 people a day. He has 70 community kitchens in Khartoum. But they rely on donations, and because of the mobile banking apps that are not working, they can't get those. So he's had to close down many of his operations. 25 million people, that's half the population of Sudan, need food aid to survive. And that's very, very sad. Not much better in the south, though, Gareth. You know, there are acute levels of violence there because of insecurity. A key pipeline. The oil from South Sudan goes through Sudan, through Port Sudan, in fact, to the rest of the world. And when things don't work in Sudan, it affects South Sudan's oil movement. But a pipeline that carries something like four-fifths of the oil out of South Sudan has been damaged. Now, South Sudan, two-thirds of their oil revenues are affected by this, and 90% of that country's oil revenues revenues come from oil, according to the World Bank. So it's really sad. The shutdown of the oil well means that people are not, you know, people haven't been benefiting from oil, and a lot of people in South Sudan are saying, good thing that it's closed. We're not getting anything from this oil. You know, with that attitude, the money from the oil is going to a narrow elite people in Juba. Salva Kiir has corrupt, the president has corrupt special projects. Civil servants, for example, haven't been paid in 6 months. 7.7 million people, that's two-thirds of the population, are facing extreme hunger. And you know, there's a state collapse is very, very possible there. Salva Kiir, surrounded by his henchmen, has no money to hold elections.
Oh, my God.
To see, you know, to underline. So things are looking very, very bad there. The last production halt in oil was 2012. He borrowed enough money to virtually ruin South Sudan into the future. But that money didn't go into fuel and medicine that it was supposed to go to. It went to his loyalists. And again, the UAE is offering to lend money, and we'll talk about the UAE later. This will put South Sudan into poverty for generations. And sadly, the UAE seems to be supporting the irregulars, the RSF, in the battle. So, it's a very, very bleak story from what was once, both parts of what was once Africa's biggest country.
What a disappointment. Is there better news in Senegal?
Well, I think so, but the French don't. Senegal, if we talk about client states, was 100%. 100% client state of France. You know, its position on international affairs, for example, in its own continent, in Western Sahara, is just a repetition of the French position. You know, and they're a country that, well, they're about to produce gas and oil, but they haven't yet started. They have now a new president, Bassirou Diomaye Faye, 44 years old, Africa's youngest elected president.
Can you imagine?
How old?
44.
44 years old, a former tax inspector. And he's not from the kind of rich. He didn't go to a private school abroad. He was schooled there. He didn't want to become the president. But Ousmane Sonko, the guy who would have shooed in, was jailed. As was Faye at one point, and they were both released a week before the elections. But Sonko has a conviction that didn't allow him to stand, so he endorsed Faye, and Faye ended up winning first round in this election, 54% of the vote. There were 19 candidates, and then another, the Amadou Ba, who was from the ruling party, he came in with only 30% of the votes. But of the 19. Not one, the other 17, in other words, got more than 3% of the vote. And the first woman candidate got less than 1%. So what Faye is promising is to relook at relations with traditional allies. And France is one of those. And I'll tell you some of the things he's been saying about them. But there will be a new currency, he says, to replace the Central African franc, which is, you know, French controlled, also to look at contracts, certainly with oil and gas coming, that's very important. But, you know, you have fishermen, for example, saying, hopefully he can do something for us, because foreign trawlers and illegal fishermen are ruining our fishing stocks. And from their place where they protect their boats and fix their nets and beach their boats, etc., you can look up and see the villas of the very rich, and that shows the divisions in that country, the inequality, which is what we suffer too. But are we the most unequal country in Africa? Maybe, but Senegal, you know, would give us a go on that amount. But here, Faye speaking, saying that France, it is time for France to lift its knee off our neck, to put an end to just oppression, unjust oppression. We have centuries of misery, human trafficking, colonization, neo-colonization, and they have caused unbearable suffering. This, we must end the circle of oppression. It's high time for France to leave us alone. They must learn from other African countries. Germany is the leading power in Europe, overtaken by France. It doesn't exploit any other country. Italy, Spain, they don't bother with any African country. Excuse me. Well, any African country that doesn't bother their former colonies. But what grounds does France believe it can continue to impose leaders on us, make changes on our behalf? This must come to an end. The emerging Africa elite, diaspora, the youth are all saying no to French hypocrisy, and he gives it details on that. But we expect nothing from France, he says. We desire her to stop meddling in our affairs. And
is this not what every president says when they come to power? Because it's easier to just go at the colonial masters than to address the real problems.
But that it should happen in Senegal is very, very important. He calls for France to completely withdraw from Africa. And I find that hugely interesting. Now, I was saying earlier that, you know, Africa, certainly West Africa, breathed a sigh of relief when Macky Sall's plan to delay elections in Senegal, which is the bastion of democracy there, failed. He tried to hang on for about another year. And I breathed a sigh of relief. And I thought France would have breathed the deepest sigh of relief because that is the coup-ridden part of our continent. And then now suddenly things are working there. Democracy has worked. The legal system to cause the election, force the election, has worked. But I think the French are looking. I'm waiting to see how France responds to Faye's very, very tough remarks.
Kudos to him. I wish him all the luck in the world, actually. I'm going to keep an eye on that, yeah.
I think everybody is, you know, to be frank. He's an impressive young man. As I say, 44 years old, former tax inspector. He promises to rule with humility and with transparency. That
also,
is something nice to see
an African president who isn't over 70 years old.
Like, thank God for that.
All right. What about the UAE? Because we often talk about China and Russia and how involved they are in Africa. You know, the neo-colonialists. We talk about the French now with Senegal, but we've got Chinese and Russian colonialism happening in full force as well. And nobody seems to be complaining about them quite as much as they did about the forces of the 1800s. However, the UAE, it seems, has become the fourth largest investor in Africa with 4.5 billion committed to the continent's clean energy. There are obviously different kinds of investment here. I mean, Russia sending the Wagner Group is not the same kind of investment as the UAE putting actual money into things. Africa and clean energy, is this a priority for us, or are we just taking money from wherever we can take it, as usual?
As usual, the fact, I like the neo-colonial story. You know, when I went last to China, I was speaking to, he's now a vice foreign minister, more than one deputy, vice foreign minister, who was formerly ambassador here, and he laughed and said, you know, we are called neo-colonialists, and the only people really complaining about it are the former colonial powers, you know, and they really know about colonialism much more than we ever do. But so we don't take these charges very seriously. But now that the UAE has stepped in with this further amount, there's $60 billion has been invested between 2012 and 2022. It's good to do that, not to count the money that was invested during colonial time by the Emirates. Now, they're the number four investor in Africa over this past decade. That is behind China, Europe, and the United States. There is turmoil over investment deals. There are social environmental repercussions to the investments they have made. But the UAE is the number one investor from the Gulf, and it is followed by Saudi Arabia, Qatar, and Kuwait. Mm-hmm. But very interestingly, the countries are coming back. In other words, investing in those countries, and 21,000 African countries have been established in the United Arab Emirates. So that is certainly a new theater of investment for us. But unfortunately, as I say, they've been involved. The Saudi Arabia trying to mediate between the rapid support forces and the army in Sudan. But the UAE, again, seems to be supporting Hameti, the RSF leader. So they must, you know, to investment is fantastic. But involvement in the struggles in Africa, in the internecine fighting, is not a good thing at all.
Well, I suppose you can't choose the means of someone's assistance. Mm-hmm. You either accept their assistance, and then the conditions they're attached thereto, or you don't accept their assistance, right? JJ, it's always good to talk to you.
Absolutely.
Thank you for that information. Useful stuff to know, and certainly a lot more interesting than what we would glean from the non-existent African focus of the rest of the South African press. So thank you for your insights, as always. Great to see you. JJ Cornish and Africanalysis, brought to you by the Johannesburg Business School this morning.
Good, Good to be with you.
Thank you, JJ.
Cheers, JJ.
Very, very good. Ooh, I seem to have disconnected all of us from...
Oh, wow.
Hang on.
You've disappeared.
I don't know what happened. We all disappeared at once. Me, you, and JJ. There we go.
Oh, well, it looks like I'm still
here.
And
I'm back.
There we go.
Good stuff. All right. We will be back in just a moment, everybody. We've got a quick break, and then it's Democracy 101. So there he is. We're talking to a guy called Mpo Dagada, who's written this book, I Am the Vision. Just a, you know, small humble brag.
Yeah. The entire thing.
So not claiming too much, but we'll find out what he has to say for himself. Democracy 101. Of course, it's getting closer and closer to those elections.
Yes, it is.
We will be back with that and a whole lot more. Stick around.